Hello, we are Terra Nova, a horror podcast. We're hosted by Kendall and Jackie. And here we talk about everything, well, horror. And this podcast is specifically for you, the horror fans, and also the non-horror fans. If you're too scared to watch the movies, it's fine. We talk about it, we discuss it, we dissect it, we laugh about it, talk about the good, the bad, the tropes, and new episodes are launched every Monday.
And follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Terra Nova Pod. And leave a review, 5 stars, of course, on no platforms that you listen. And last but not least, tell a friend, tell a friend, tell a friend.
And tell your dog, too. Cool down. Hello.
What's going on, Jackie? How you doing?
Dying inside.
Well, this time for good reason.
Yeah. And this movie is perfect because summer. God, I hate summer.
You were just telling me you love summer until it hit 90 degrees, but you were just saying you like summer.
I do not. No, I'm more of a fall winter person. I love the cold. I hate summer.
I feel you.
Not for me. The sun burns my vampire skin. I don't like it. No, dead ass, like, real quick, I told my nephew back when he was, like, 9 years old, I was a vampire, and he believed me. I was very proud of that moment.
Did he ever try to feed you garlic or anything?
No, because I told him how I don't like garlic because it burns me.
He was just accepting of that?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really. I love garlic, but yeah.
I wish I'd have thought of something clever like that with kids. I usually just let them climb all over me and act crazy. I never thought of telling them I'm a fucking vampire. But that's beside the point. That's beside the point. Today, we got a guest. We have a guest. Another guest. This is awesome. So, friend of a friend, Thaddeus. How's it going, Thaddeus? How's everything?
Everything's great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem, man. Thank you for coming on.
Love y'all work.
Oh, we appreciate thank you.
It. Well, absolutely. Keep doing what you're doing.
Oh, great, man. Yeah, I met Thaddeus through actually a friend of mine, friend Derek. Derek hasn't been on a podcast or anything like that, but I just want to mention that. Really nice dude. I appreciate every conversation I've had with him. Me and him had a really good talk, like, a few months back where he was talking about some movie ideas he had and stuff, and I was like, oh, Derek is cool. And then when we started the podcast, he was like, oh, you should meet my friend Thaddeus. Like, this dude loves horror. And I was like, oh, great. And that's kind of where Thaddeus and I's relationship kind of started. So, yeah, I appreciate you coming on, man.
Absolutely. Any chance I get to talk about horror movies is a great day.
I mean, horror is just like, horror is that genre that is a bit of everything and for everyone, especially this movie, because again, it's so matching right now with summer, because it's hot. I just want to disclaim it right now in New York, we're going through a heat wave, so I'm like, I'm very hot right now.
Sound like you melting, and that is just talking about how it's always hot down where he's at. He's like, 90 something ain't nothing, but.
Yeah, it's always hot here.
I mean, in Puerto Rico, 100 is nothing. That's normal.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
The Caribbean, man, they're used to that weather. 97 is spring.
Do they get the humidity, though?
Nope. They don't get really the humidity. Because they're surrounded by water, so it's more, like, breezy and cool. But they're so used to it. 97 is spring to them. That's spring weather, 97.
Yeah, that's about what we get here in South Carolina.
That's wild. Yeah, I couldn't do it. But I guess, you know, more than anything, the humidity is the worst part of it, so.
Oh my god, yes.
Yeah, can't do it. But that is, hey, you said you love horror. We know that's why you're here.
Absolutely.
Talking about horror. Tell us about your relationship to the genre, man. Like, tell us some of your likes, dislikes.
Oh man. I love it all. Probably too much. My wife and kids probably think something's wrong with me. I love psychologicals, horror, slashers, creature features. Of course, my favorite, you guys trash, which was the original Halloween, but it's okay, you know.
you didn't trash it. The first one is great. I feel like the franchise isn't great, but the first one is great.
Yeah, the first one. I always look at the first two, right, even though it took them forever to do the second one in the mm-hmm. original. And the lore of Michael Myers, I enjoy that. He's my favorite, one of my favorite horror characters. He's probably my favorite horror character. He is actually stenciled on the back of my car. So, yeah, he is my favorite.
That's dope.
Nice.
Yeah, he's he's pretty awesome. I've got coffee mugs and all of that stuff with Michael Myers face all over him. That's my favorite. I'm so looking forward to Halloween Kills coming out this October.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get them to play it. I actually, so I am the program director for a art house theater here in South Carolina. And so I'm trying to get them to play that or Candyman this year, the new Nina DaCosta horror movie. So I'm all things horror. I think horror can actually talk about the things that we don't want to talk about in real life. And so I'm always pulling back the onion layers of horror to show how it actually speaks to cultural and societal issues. So I can go academic on films, and then I can also go, yeah, he took that axe and really just slaughtered her with it. So I just, you know, enjoy both sides. but it started as a kid, you know. Friday the 13th, the original. I saw that movie at a sleepover. Had no business seeing that movie at the age I was. I was probably about 5 at a sleepover. And,
oh, wow.
And the parents were like in the other room doing other things. And we snuck off into this back room and caught like from the middle on of Friday, the original Friday the 13th. And I was hooked. Mm-hmm. I was hooked from that point on. Everything horror was all I wanted to watch from and read. Fangoria magazine and all of the, you know, cult classic B movies like Ghoulies and Troll and all these, you know, all those types of movies. So I was hooked, and I've been hooked ever since.
Nice.
Yeah,
very, awesome. Very nice.
It's in the blood. And I'm actually writing a horror movie. I wrote a horror movie, so I'm in the process of actually making a horror movie called Tattoo.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Yeah, it's called Tattoo. It's about a man possessed by a tattoo. And the tattoo is sort of like a skin genie, so to speak. It can make things happen, and the only caveat is that, you know, you got to feed it, and it eats human souls. So
that's pretty dope.
Yeah, I've been working on that for a while, and we've just got some funding for it, and we're in the process of getting it cast and getting all our plans together to shoot hopefully late October this year for a next year October release.
That's awesome, man. That's really cool. I can imagine the process of making a movie is like nowhere near as easy as people make it seem. Or try to make it seem anywhere.
No, it's not. I shoot a lot of horror short films. And so mm-hmm. I've been practicing for years. But it is a grueling process. You know, the average movie takes about 5 years to get made, you know, from the conception all the way through post-production. And that's, you know, that's my wheelhouse. That's what I do. I'm a filmmaker. And the programming came along as a condition of the actual filmmaking. So, and I teach other people how to make films. So I also teach at a college here and teach photography, multimedia, business, and videography.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, you really was like, man, I like horror. I'm doing everything now, like photography. Short form video, that's amazing. That's really cool, man. Congrats on all of that.
Thank you. I mean, that's that was the point. I dropped out of college for 10 years and decided to come back and become a filmmaker, and I just finished my doctorate in creative project management. So yeah, everything I've been doing since then has been geared towards being able to make movies and tell stories, specifically horror movies. So yeah. So I'm totally stoked to be here talking about one of my all-time favorite
movies. Oh, yeah. All right. That's good to hear. That's good to hear. Yeah, I know we didn't mention it yet, but today we're talking about Jaws, as Jackie alluded to so beautifully with the damn heat out here. I would use a beach right now. We're talking about Jaws today, the 1975 classic Jaws.
I just want to say one thing is that Kendall had no idea that every July 4th they give a marathon of all the Jaws films. And that's why I watch all the Jaws films, because they give them every July 4th. All of them. even the really terrible 3D one.
You gotta love the 3D. It makes no sense, but it's awesome.
It's true. It really makes no sense. Like, I told Kendall a little bit of it, and I was just like, bro, it's so bad, but it's so good.
It is. It's one of those movies you're like watching a train wreck you can't turn away from. It's like, oh, this is terrible. Eat him. Did he did he just eat Louis Gossett Jr.?
Is it Sharknado levels of crazy? Like, is it that kind of wild?
No, this is predecessor Sharknado. Like,
oh, okay.
Sharknado. Yeah. A whole nother level of bad.
For sure. And I'm looking forward to doing that one at some point, too. We got a few Shark movies lined up to do in the future. So, but let's get into this one. That actually, you know what? Our guest, Thaddeus, you want to do the summary?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Sure, I'll do it.
All right, cool. You can't mess it up. You can't go wrong. Have fun with it.
Oh, okay. Well, great. So, picture this. July 4th. Everybody's on Amity Island, ready to go to the beach. And, yeah, Chief Brody wants to close the beaches. Why? Because there's a rogue shark patrolling the island, and everybody's lined up to be a smorgasbord. Jaws starts off as a it starts off with a scene where there's, you know, two, you know, lovely young people skinny dipping, having a little fun, and Jaws comes along to spoil that fun right away, you know, taking his first victim and causing all kinds of problems for the citizens of the island. It sets in motion really the conflict for someone who's trying to protect the island, someone who's trying to protect the economics of the island, and a lot of people who just want to splash around in the water. And, yeah, we get to tag along for the adventure as, Jaws wrecks everyone's summer.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. Thank you for that. Appreciate it. Appreciate the summary. Clean and simple. First, let's go into our next round. First impressions. Jackie, we'll start with the lady of the hour. Jackie, have first impressions of Jaws.
I think when I first saw this movie, it freaked me out because, like, I was scared of the water and sharks, but I also find them so majestic. Like, I became kind of obsessed with sharks. As a child, I used to collect, like, these National Geographic books on sharks. And I also did, like, one of my papers in high school on sharks. I was been so obsessed, and which is kind of why I always watch Shark Week every year. Mm-hmm. I never miss it. But yeah, this movie really like freaked me out a bit when I first saw it as a kid. Even now, like when I go deep water, I'm always thinking like, is there gonna be a shark in here? And that's what Steven Spielberg did. You know, he based this on a real fear, a real, you know, monster in the water, you know, sharks, even though they are majestic, but deadly.
Yeah, word, through and through. That is first impressions.
Yeah, I learned how to swim by my father throwing me in the ocean. So that was
that's a hell of a start.
Hell of a start. And so when I first saw this movie, it flashed back to that, like my dad threw me to the shark. And so it really like Jackie said, it put me on the edge of my seat because like I never went in the water the same way again. After seeing this movie, I never felt at ease going, but so far, you know, I needed to be able to get back to land very quickly. And even to this day, I'm very, very cautious whenever I go out on the water, even after having training to be on the water. It's just like, oh, my God, to see that there's something so massive. And, you know, if you are in its realm, you're at its mercy. And so to see all those things come together on screen where and to see, you know, Chief Brody's palpable fear of the ocean and then having to go out to confront this thing, it really struck a chord with me. And every time it comes on, I sit down and watch it because it's just I learn something new. I see something new every single time. I without a doubt love this. This is one of my favorite summer horror movies.
Oh, nice, man. Legit. For me, this was my first time watching it in a while. I remember, it, as far as I recall seeing it, I was like, this movie came out clearly before I was born. I was born in 89. This movie came out in 75. But I think I first saw this movie when I was maybe about 6 or 7 years old. It might have been one of the first, I guess we can say, creature features. I guess we could put this in that category, kind of. This might have been like one of the first like creature feature type kind of movies that I've seen, that I've ever seen. And I remember just being like kind of so shocked by it and kind of just really throwing it off. Like, you almost forget that the shark isn't even in the movie a lot. It just kind of, it kind of scared the hell out of me a little bit as a kid. I think it's just like the, a combination of like how big the shark is and how it could just kind of like gulp you up. And it was a combination of that and just like being in the water as a whole. Like, there's so many things about, you know, about oceans and beaches and just bodies of water that we don't know and can't see. And you can't really look at your feet while you're floating in there. That scared the hell out of me a little bit as a kid. I was never a great swimmer to begin with. So that didn't help either, and very much at Thaddeus's point, I would stay close to shore even when I went to the beach. But I was like, man, I don't know how deep I gotta be for sharks to get me, but I know how deep I'm going, and it ain't gonna be very deep. So yeah, watching this movie only reinforced that. this movie only reinforced that. Between this and Piranhas, I was all messed up with water. I was like, you know what, I'm gonna just stay close to the shore. It's not that big of a deal. I don't need to be Michael Phelps, nothing like that. So, but overall, the movie's great, man. I really enjoyed the movie. It's, even today, watching it, rewatching it for the first time in a while, because like Jackie said, I didn't know they did the marathon every 4th of July. So I don't got cable anymore, and I don't really sit around for movie marathons as much as I used to. So I had no idea. I know there's Shark Week, and I'm sure they showed it during that, but I just didn't think much of it. But yeah, this movie's great. The actors are fantastic. The story is really good. Story is really interesting. There's definitely a good combination of like, oh shit, there's a shark out there, but then like the real life like consequences of, you know, what happens if this city kind of loses money during its most popular time of year and stuff like that. And also has a little bit of like a hunter vibe to it and a little bit of a slasher vibe. The movie has a little bit of everything and it's really good, but great cast, great acting all around. I really enjoy it. Really, really enjoy it.
We're gonna need a bigger boat.
Absolutely. A 46-year-old movie that still holds up today is just, it's amazing that it's tapped into some primal fear, you know, that, and everybody knows it because when you hear that theme music, you know.
Yeah. I think as a kid, I used to think that music played when you was in the water. I used to think you'd just be at the beach and it was like a spider sense. You'd hear that and you'd think of sharks nearby. Like, that song, the music is iconic. I almost forgot it was from this movie because I feel like that score has been like either parodied or just used in a lot of different ways. I almost forget it's specific to this movie or like came for this movie.
When you think about scores, like when I think about sounds of movies, like and specifically horror movies, right? I can think of Jaws, Friday the 13th, and Halloween are my like top three highly noticeable. Like, whenever you hear mm-hmm. them, you know exactly what they are.
Yep.
That is true, yeah. Like, it really is iconic. And this movie is very iconic for the decade, for everything it stands for, you know? Like, there's so many quotable moments, so many moments you remember. Like, the thing, too, about this film is that it's kind of a reflection of what we're going through now. You know, like, they knew there was a shark. They knew it killed somebody, and Brody was just like, we got to close the beaches. And the mayor was just like, no, we can't do that. It has to stay open. We got to think about the tourism. This is a beach city. What about the people? And then, boom, you know, somebody dies. The mom is just like, you knew there was a shark here, and yet you still kept the beaches open. Why? And it's funny because, like, when stuff was happening last year, they reference this movie a lot.
Oh, absolutely.
With the choices that was made. They were just like, this is Jaws all over again.
Yeah, you know, that's an excellent way to put it. I mean, wow, yeah. Yeah. We've lived through Jaws on the land.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And there's something to be said for leadership in general. Because that's really what it is, right? It's a leadership thing, a choice at the end of the day, right? Like, do you ignore the problem and hope that you can get everything you want from a situation before the problem is a bigger problem? Or do you try to be more preventative instead of reactive? That's really what it is, right? Do you want to be more of a preventative leader or a reactive leader? And some people, I feel like that's a conversation that's probably been happening throughout just history. People always like, I don't know, if it's not that bad at the moment, then maybe you kind of just let it go until it really is that bad. And my initial thinking is always to be preventative, because I feel like if you're reactive, then at that point, the person who was harmed is probably not the person who was a part of the decision making.
That's true.
Case in point here, like the child who died, like it was one thing when a girl died at the beginning, but the child who died, the people who died when they actually went back out there, they weren't a part of the decision making. They were just a part of, they were just a collateral damage to the decision making that took place. So
yeah, the innocent, yeah. Right? The innocent have to, the innocent suffer at the mistakes of the folks that are quote unquote in charge. And what happens when the folks in charge don't have the people's, all of the people's best interest at heart, right? And I think we see that being diametrically opposed in the characters of Brody and the mayor, right? The mayor is only worried about one sliver of the population, the economics of it, and getting reelected, whereas Brody is charged with the safety of everyone on the island. But he's also just a figurehead. He really has no power without anyone else.
Yeah, it's that a good point. True. Yeah, Jackie.
Before we continue, I want to pause real quick. It is raining. I feel the breeze and I feel the raindrops. Thank you, Jesus. So I just want to say that. You could edit this out, but I just want to say that. Oh, God. Thank you. Fucking heat wave. To go back to what you said before, another prime example is 4th of July. You know, they have to set everything up, but they also have to have the Coast Guards out. They have to have all the people out in the water to make sure they keep check on the shark. And then what does the mayor do? He sees everybody on the beach sitting down and he's just like, why aren't you in the water? You should get in the water. Why aren't you in the water? Kind of pushing that notion. God, he was such a terrible elected official. Like, he was really bad. He was just so awful.
And the bigger question is, why aren't you in the water? If you're pushing everybody else into the water, why aren't you in the water? So it makes us question, and to your point about, you know, the things we went through earlier, you have all this health care, you have all these medical scientists and you know, the joint chiefs of whoever to take care of you, to make sure that you're well. And you're not even out and about.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. It's very true. It's funny how the people who want you to move a certain way or do a certain thing tend to act the complete opposite or not even follow their own advice, quote unquote. Yeah, that dude was pretty trash. And it, you know, the scene with a mother really came to him, as Jackie pointed out, where she was like, you knew there was a shark, you let us go in there. She was just talking to pretty much the police chief. And it's like, it sucks that the police chief has to take the brunt of this backlash from a situation that he never caused. Like, it was above him. He literally wasn't the final decision maker. But he took it on the chin.
I know, I was going to say, you're absolutely right. That shows his character. And he felt a real responsibility, because he felt like, I think he felt like, maybe I should have fought a little harder to close the beaches. I could have done something, but it was out of his hands. And for that guy is a heel, man. For him to stand, and if you watch all the way, you know, watch all the way through the scene, he goes, "She's wrong, Martin. She's wrong. No, she's right." He walks off. I love that scene because it's just, oh my God, it leads to the setup for the whole give us a kiss scene. I love that scene too.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, like, oh God, I love this fucking movie. Like, it's so good. But not just the mayor, when they had to have, okay, so Alex the boy is killed, they have to hold the whole conference and everything. Let's point to the people first of all the people that were there in that conference were all like, but are the beaches going to be closed? Is this going to be closed? What's going on? And when he said, yes, I think it's best our interest, we close the beaches. And they were all like, oh, no. So it's like, it wasn't even the mayor. It was also like his secretary. It was also the people, the townspeople, you know. It's just like, okay, I get it. But yeah, it was just awful.
I'm sorry. It's like Reed and the whole need to, well, what are we going to do about money, and what are we going, like, it's putting money before the actual lives of people. That and notice that nobody in that meeting mention, like they mention it in passing that we got to catch the shark, but nobody mentions that the, you know, the little boy is dead, and are we doing anything for the family? They're all so concerned about what are we going to do about the rest of the summer? Are you closing the beach? And it just, it's like the whole, you know, avarice, just the wealthy treading on the little people who probably work in their shops and, you know, buy their trinkets and go out on their boats. And they're the people that are being eaten alive by this monster.
So true. And I love how when they brought in the biologist, you know, but before the biologist, like, let's talk back with the coroner, like with the coroner, you know, when they ruled the girl like, oh, accidental boat accident. At first he said it was a shark attack. He labeled it as a shark attack at first. And then he changed his mind because the mayor pressured him to, because he didn't want to cause panic. Mm-hmm. And then when the biologist came, I think his name was Matthew.
Yep, Hooper.
He came, yes, Matthew Hooper. He came in, he expected the body, and he was just like, this was not no boat accident. This was a shark attack.
Did you see the disdain that he had on his face? When he looked at, like, he's like, can you give me a drink of water? And he looks at him, he's like, you know, he basically said, you know damn well this was not a boating accident.
He was so, yeah, he was so upset. Like, did you not call the Coast Guard? Did you not close the beaches? Like, what is wrong with you guys? And even when he brought it up, the how, like, you know, there's, it could be a Pacific shark. There's so many different breeds of sharks, you know, and they hire all those fishermen from around the world to try to, you know, get the shark, and they caught one shark. And he was just like, that's not your shark. The mayor was just like, we caught it. It's over. We're going to have a great summer. And Matthew was still just like, you guys are dumbasses. And I love when he quoted, he was just like, it's going to become your problem when it jumps up and bites you in the ass. Like, I love that line because he was just so angry. And I was just like, yeah, the mayor was terrible. I hated the mayor.
Yeah, he is totally just inefficient. And he really is a symbol of how bureaucracy is only focused on getting reelected and pleasing the folks with money as constituents. You know, the regular average person is not even on his radar, which makes me think about Hooper, who is independently wealthy, and he's so independently wealthy that he's disconnected from the system, which made me really think about, you know, those folks that are like philanthropists that really use their money to go out and change the world. He is very much symbolic of that. He's so rich that he's disconnected from the chase of the economics of this area, that he can afford to make to speak power to truth in those instances when Brody is powerless and can't really say what he wants to say.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good point, actually. I didn't even look at it from that angle. That is a great point. He very much so is like, he's independently wealthy, but he's not detached from his humanity. So he feels comfortable telling them, like, oh, you're doing a terrible job. Like, you're crazy. Like, if you think this is going to work this way, like, you're insane. Yeah, I've never really thought of it like that, but that's really interesting. That's a unique way to look at that. And actually, 100% accurate.
Yeah, very true. Like, it's just, and I love how, like, when he was just like, the only way we'll know if this is your shark is if we open it up. And this is before he ever established what kind of shark it is.
Yeah.
And he was just like, just open it up. Let's see if, you know, this is your shark. Was not. And then that's when they went into the expedition to figure out what's going on, what the seeding happens. And then they found that boat that was submerged. And that's when he found the shark tooth. And he was just like, you're dealing with a great white shark.
And he was shook. Can we talk about how shook this fellow was when he saw that head floating and found that tooth? He couldn't get back to the surface quick enough. In that moment, he understood fully, I am in mortal danger by being in this water any longer than I have to be. And he hightailed it up and looked like the boogeyman smacked him around a couple times.
For sure. He really did. Oh, to go back to the town hall, I just remember one part that was really funny. Like, the town hall meeting they had was when they said they were going to close the beach for at least 24 hours. one person screamed 24 hours. That's like 3 weeks. That shit made me laugh. I had to pause the whole movie.
I caught the same thing. I never heard that before until the last time I watched it, which was like a couple days ago. And it sounds like a young girl. She's like, that's like 3 weeks. Hilarious.
That cracked me up. That had me dying. But, yeah, no, it was great when they had to cut the shark open. Because even the scene before that, when he mentioned it, because everyone was so... This is the painting the picture for people who maybe not seen this movie in a while. When they finally catch a shark, and then everybody's so excited, they taking photographs and all that. They trying to call up the press conference. They trying to do everything. They're like, yep, it's over with. We're done. We got it. We all good. And then he comes up there, and he's like, you're not going to know until we cut the shark open. And dude's like, hey, the man's like, why are you worried about that? Let's just take a photograph. We good. He's like, take a photograph and we good. Like, what? We're not even sure this is the damn shark. Like, I told you it was good. It has to be bigger than this. That doesn't look big enough. Like, we need to check this before we put anybody back in the water. Like, what's wrong with you?
Oh, yeah.
So
he's like, I'm not
just wasn't trying to listen to him.
Not at all. And he was like, I don't want to see that little Kittner boy spill out all over the dock. And kind of just brushed him off and walked away. And I think that Brody wanted to believe that it was the shark, but he knew inside, like, that gut feeling was telling him, you know, this is not it. And then it didn't help that the lady came and slapped the fire out of him in front of everybody.
I know, but that wasn't even his fault. Again, that was the mayor, you know, like, he kind of pushed Brody. And it's crazy because, like, he's from out of town. You know, they tend to, like, emphasize that he's not from there. He's like, oh, you're from out of town. You're a city boy. You don't know how everything works here. And his first instinct from his, you know, experience and everything was like, we have to close this. We got to do that. Of course, the mayor was just like, no, we don't. You know, you're a city boy. You're new. We're not going to do any of that. It's fine. And this is sad.
Yeah. You know, that's like the, again, part of that societal outsider. You don't know how things work, you know, and we see that same thing in our political structure now, right? You don't know how the system works. Mm-hmm. Oh, it takes like the thing politicians love to say, you got to go along to get along, right? You gotta wait your turn and all of these different things. Martin not being of the system, but understanding that he has no power, feels very much powerless in any decision he made until he reclaims that. And he doesn't reclaim that until, you know, his kid, the kids are attacked in the pond, and his kid, yeah, the mayor's kids are out there, and he's walking around with some level of guilt and shame. And Martin, Chief Brody, you know, confronts him and basically says, hey, you're going to do the thing that you're good at. You're going to sign a check.
Even then, he was just like mumbling something of like, oh, I can't, like, we gotta think about this, we gotta think about that. And I was, he's like, what the hell are you mumbling? Like, sign this. You're gonna pay Quinn off to get the shark.
Nope. I think he was mumbling about his kids. He was like, my kids are out there too. And
yeah,
I think that's the only, that's, you know, when we're writing characters and we're writing villains, we try to give them a redeeming quality. So we don't paint him as a total bad guy. Like, he is a heel. He is a bad guy, but at least he loves his kids, right? And that's kind of his redeeming quality, although it's not much because you still put your kids in harm's way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. He definitely did.
Monsters, on the other hand, like Jaws, rarely have any redeeming quality whatsoever. They are, you know, single mission in nature, and I think that was a huge driving force. Even when we start to see Quinn and Hooper and Chief out on the water, and we see that bonding happening, and mm-hmm. we start to like them, and we have to be reminded, hey, I'm hunting here. Like, Jaws shows up, like, let me flex on you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good point. I feel like the only, I guess, creature that has the demon qualities I can think of off the top of my head is like Frankenstein. It's probably like the one exception to that rule.
Well, Frankenstein wasn't the monster. Frankenstein's monster was the monster.
Good point. Frankenstein's monster. Yeah. Not the doctor himself.
Yeah. But like, even then, when we got the introduction of Quinn, you know, the fisherman who's been hunting sharks since like forever. And he was very an interesting character, like very interesting. and it was just like, oh, I'll catch the fish for you for this amount of money. And of course, people were like, but then, yeah, but after he sees everything that happened, he was just like, you're going to need me. You're going to need me, Chief. Like, I love Quinn, man. He was a dope character.
I did not like Quinn until he tells the story about the Indian. And then his character, to me, comes into frame of why he acts the way. And then I liked him. Up until that point, he's very much, he's a character that is down on Hooper because he feels like Hooper's an elitist. Like, you've got money. You never worked a day in your life. Like, how dare you come out here and tell me how to run my boat kind of guy, right? It's that blue-collar working class kind of...
old man stuff.
Yeah, that kind of
like, back in my day, we did this kind of thing.
Oh, my God. Hey, young blood. Yeah, back in my day. Yeah, you know, that kind of stuff. And then we see... he does, and Spielberg does it so skillfully in how he shows them having a lot more in common than they let on in the beginning. Like, the differences were right on the surface, but they had so much more in common underneath. Even to the point where Hooper goes at the end, he's like, Quint, and Chief is like, no. And he's like, damn, not my dog.
Yeah. Quint was definitely that. Sorry, I got Jackie.
And I was gonna say that the theme about the story, but the Indianapolis, like, that's a real story too. But that really happened.
Oh yeah. And the way that you weave in, you know, I've done that in some shorts, that you weave in bits of real history to bolster your story, to really make it have some really good grounding and legging. And you can hear even in the tonal switch of the music as he's, and even in Hooper's face, when he mentions, he tells him, he's like, I had that removed. And he's like, what did it say, mom? And he's laughing and joking. And he says, no, that's the USS Indianapolis. And Hooper stops dead, like almost deadpan, like, oh my God. He realizes the gravity of what he's joking at. And it slowly, kind of like a fishing reel, it slowly unwinds as he tells this story. And it just, it really reels you in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It shows his whole disdain and why he hunts sharks, because he watched all his comrades get eaten alive.
Absolutely. And then
this movie was great.
Yeah. He talks about, I'll never put another life jacket on. I think that was the most telling piece for me. You knew when I heard that, I knew he was going to die.
Oh, that's a good point. Oh, man, I didn't even consider that. That's a really good point. Yeah, because he definitely was like, before he told that story, as you mentioned, like, he was like kind of like that battle-worn character who's like, I've seen some shit like you guys have never seen, the stuff that I've seen and stuff like that. And then as you live with them, you're kind of like, you know, he ain't that bad. Like, you know, he just has that old man mentality, which, you know, that come with it. They just, some dudes get like that, especially probably in his line of work, or nobody else in town seems to really do what he does. Like, even when he kind of, during the town hall, when he came in, I think he asked for like $10,000 or something like that to kill the shark, which in 1975, $10,000 is a lot of money. That's a lot of money. So, but at the same time, nobody laughed at him when he said it. It was like everybody was kind of aware that this dude has been through something. They just weren't sure whether or not they wanted to pay him, but they was also like, they didn't doubt his abilities. I'll say that much.
Oh yeah, they knew. Yeah. They knew, but they, again, like people often do when money is concerned, they want to take the cheaper route always, you know, and look for the easy way out. And he knew it was only going to be a matter of time, I think, that, you know, they were going to be back asking him. And his whole intro of scratching the chalkboard, what way to get somebody's attention? Oh, my God.
Yeah, Jack.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, drinking water. I love it because everyone was freaking out about Brody. Decision of closing the beaches, you know, and everyone was like, oh, being loud and obnoxious. And then he comes in and he was just like, I'll catch your fish. I'll catch it. Like, I'll do it for you. Pay me this amount and I'll do it.
Yeah, facts. You know, I think somewhere $10,000 in 75, I looked it up, is like 50 grand today to catch that shark. So Wow, that's a lot of purchasing power, and he's got this beat up fishing vessel, like, and just even some of the little intricacies of that vessel, like, tell you everything you need to know. He's boiling like the jaws of sharks and mounting them in his little hut and inside the cabin of this wooden gnarled fishing vessel. There's little hidden knives and, you know, all kinds of things going on. But he is very much a person that is prideful, because even when Hooper's like, when they finally are being chased by Jaws, and he's like, don't push it so hard. And what does he do? Push it harder. Like, you're not going to tell me what.
Yeah.
To his detriment. Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Even when Chief Brody was trying to call for help. Because they were pretty much in the middle of nowhere. They were isolated. The engine was being broke. Jaws was just like, I'm on a hunt to kill you guys. And then Quinn breaks the radio. I forgot why he broke it. I forgot his reason for it. He said something. I forgot what
Brody it was. Calls it for the Coast Guard. And mm-hmm. and Quinn basically tells him, you know, we don't need the Coast Guard. I'm going to catch this. I'm going to kill this fish. And then Brody was like, well, Kim, that's just great. You're certifiable. And when are we going to like go towards land instead of letting the shark lead us out into deeper water? Now, Brody, who's someone who is not a guy on the water, but he recognizes that the shark is leading them further out the sea and further into his territory. And we are, you know, we're in dire straits, and you just killed our only lifeline. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just insane. But and then it leads up to when they start noticing how massive the shark is, and then Brody hits it with the most infamous line: "We're gonna need a bigger boat."
And he's got that mechanic cigarette hanging out of his mouth as he's talking trash. Out there, he's like, I'll show you something. Come out here and shovel some of this shit. And he looks and backs up with that shock and awe, but the cigarette is what I always recognize as, like, you know, growing up in the South and seeing shade tree mechanics here, they all have that same mm-hmm. cigarette hanging out with an inch and a half of ash that will not fall off the edge. And that's exactly how he looked. I think
most definitely.
I laughed really hard.
Yeah, the second half of the film where they're just on the boat, pretty much, because like the movie is roughly about almost 2.5 hours, roughly 2 hours or so, and the second half of it is just pretty much them on the boat. And I ain't gonna lie, for a while, because I haven't seen the movie in a long time, I forgot that the second half is pretty much almost an hour of just them, just these three characters and this shark, them going through hell and high water with this shark for hours straight. I forgot it was even that. Now, part of me was wondering, like, hold on, was this going to be boring? Because I haven't seen it in a while. So I kind of forgot how good it was. But it was interesting. I ain't going to lie. For them to kind of, it's almost innovative in a way. I got to give Steven Spielberg some credit. He just took three characters in a shark that he said barely worked when they put it together. And then he made it work for like an hour and 10 minutes, at least, for like the end of the movie. It's pretty amazing. But like, the dialogue was interesting. The action was amazing. Everything when they were going back and forth, like shooting, like harpooning the shark and trying to use the barrel so they can keep track of it underwater. Like, interesting strategy, seeing how, like, determined the shark was to get them. Like, that second half of the movie is pretty impressive. I gotta give him credit.
I think it's fantastic mm-hmm. the fact that he turned a huge weakness, which is that this shark looked crappy and didn't work right, into the strongest features of the movie, that you rarely see this thing. And then when you finally do see it, it's massive, and it's it's been built up so much that by the time you see it attacking the ship and devouring that steel cage, you believe it, and you forget
Bruce the shark.
Oh yeah, they go to Bruce the shark, right?
Yep. And
Jackie,
yeah.
I know you're the practical effects master. You love practical effects. How'd you feel about the shark?
I did like it, because I think he used three different sharks for three different things. And his reason for not showing the shark as much was to add more suspense and more fear, which it worked. because the parts where you don't see it, especially in the beginning, the opening sequence, you see the girl being dragged around and she dies instantly, like you don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's frightening. And then the only thing you see when Alice gets killed is a fin. That's it. And all the blood. And all you see is the fin of it. And it really is just like, I love it. It's really great.
You know what we forgot? We forgot the two guys that took the Christmas roast and thought they were going to catch Jaws off the edge of the dock.
Oh, yeah. Those damn fools.
That comic relief. And then he's like, his friend sees it. He's like, swim! Swim for you. Swim for your life. Like, I found that to be hilarious. And then he's like, well, what am I going to tell Alice about this roast? You can tell her whatever you want, but Jaws got that thing and gone.
Yeah, them dudes is crazy. I think they could just step off the edge over there and catch a big-ass shark. Them dudes is insane.
Yeah.
Even the whole Gold Rush, honestly, was kind of funny at first when, you know, when they didn't want to listen to Quentin, like, take up his offer, and everyone was like, we'll get it. And everybody went out there with their own boats. The boats got four or five people on a small boat. Even the Matthew, the biologist, oceanographer, he was even looking around like, man, the boats look like they're about to tip over, man. like y'all beating capacity there. Y'all maxing out. And dudes were still like, hey, we got it. We'll get it. It was like the weirdest Gold Rush I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was hilarious. He goes back in and tells them, you got like 20 guys out here that are not going to make it out of the harbor. And to Chief Brody's point, he's telling his deputy, listen, that's what I'm talking about. These are your people. Go and talk to them. This is not right. Like, go and get those guys out of that boat. He is totally powerless to reason with these folks.
And again, it goes back to what the mayor said. He was just like, this is a beach city. This is a summer city. Like, we need the beach. We need the dock. We need the waters.
Yeah, by the end of it, where Hooper is telling them, listen, that where the kids have defaced this billboard, he's like, that is accurate. That fin is and sign is accurate. That's how big a problem. And you're either going to do one or two things. You're either going to starve off this food, this fish's food supply, or you're going to go out there and kill it. And he rattles off about, I want those kids hung up by their Buster Browns, and Hooper is pissed by this point. He's just like, you know what? I'm done. I'm not going to be trying to argue and reason with someone who's lining up to be a hot lunch. That was my fit. Like, he was just like too. And then Brody asked him to come back, and he just kind of, listen, you got a real problem. And I think that oftentimes the person, correlate this to real life. Oftentimes the person that sounds the alarm that something is wrong is the one that's ridiculed the most, is the one that becomes the villain, and is the one that is with the least amount of praise when the whole thing shakes down until it's all over. And then when it's all over, somebody will do a story and say, the first person to sound the alarm was this guy, and nobody listened. And that becomes the
villain. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate, but that's true. Usually how it turns out, I would say almost 10 out of 10 times with extreme accuracy, regardless of the situation. Like, we saw how it turned out in real life, and I know a lot of people say, well, you know, they don't want to seem alarmist, or you don't want to frighten the masses, but to tell you the truth, I think a lot of times people do need somebody to either frighten them into some level of sanity. Like, because it's easy to go, hey, we can just hop in the water and go out there and play until it's your kid that's dead, or it's you that's dead. Then now you want to have a conversation. Now you want to talk about how serious of an issue this is, where this could have been avoided. And of course, you know, the people always want to say what they say. We saw how it reflected in real life, right? Like, and I know we hate to mention COVID on here, but we saw how it reflected in real life when it came to COVID. Some people took it seriously. I mean, like, even just in the masses. Some people was like, okay, cool, this is what I got to do, I'm going to do it. There were other people who was like, I bet you it ain't that bad, it ain't that big of a deal. And unfortunately, some people paid the cost because of that. And at the same time, there was no real reason to, like, risk the level of risk that that some people decided to play with. Like, it just wasn't necessary. And this movie is exactly the same. There's no reason. If there's even, like, a 1% chance that somebody's going to get eaten by a shark because it's already happened pretty recently, there's no reason you guys couldn't just try to figure out a solution. And if anything, you should have put the money behind it quicker to figure out a solution versus trying to hope you could do it as cheap as possible and move on with 4th of July because that's your big holiday.
Very true. And yeah, like, again, last year when it was really bad, it took First of all, we weren't even a full lockdown. Let's just say that. We were on a pause. And a lot of cities, a lot of countries, you know, were kind of like pressured to open early. Similar to Jaws, being pressured by someone in power. You know, it's not a big deal. We need the economy going. We need this. We need this going. And then look what happened. You know, it got so bad. And again, this is why we go back to horror films, because horror is more than just getting scared. You know, directors and writers use it as a way to reflect society, social commentary, what's happening in the world. You know, I mean, we kind of covered the whole thing with COVID. We did The Thing. And then, but this is a prime example. You know, summer. Last summer was also really bad. You saw people going out, doing whatever the hell they wanted to do, fully knowing the dangers that was out there. And again, here, you know, you saw how many people were traveling to that little small town in Jaws for 4th of July. People were driving in, the beaches were packed, you know, fully aware of a shark. And even when the mayor kind of pressured them to go in the water, you saw how, like, freaked out they were in the water.
Yeah, they even had guards out there watching. I'm like, what a guard going to do against a shark? Like, even the Coast Guard, or even, like, they had, like, security. Like, what they going to do against a shark, man? It's a shark. You can't arrest a shark.
Facts. It became a big circus. And it was a circus that was really uneventful, right? Because what did you end up having? You had all your manpower in one place, and the shark was in a completely different place.
Yep.
And even when, like, it was a false alarm, it was just a bunch of kids dressed up. When there was an actual sighting of a shark, they're screaming, and everyone's just like, yeah, whatever. But then Brody was just like, this shit might be real. And then you see his wife just like, you know, Michael's out there, so-and-so's out there, your kids are out there, and you see them all freaking out. And he's just like, no, I have to go save my kids.
Absolutely. That's a I mean, you could see in his face, once he realized his kids were in the pond, it was a different kind of run. A different kind of, yeah. I got to get over here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Man, this movie is, like I said, I haven't watched it in a while. Very, very well done. I would say really, really well done by 1975 standards, where I know they said it came out in the summertime originally when it was released, and people, I know they said it was kind of risky in its own way, because they, at the time, they tried to avoid summer releases because they assumed people wouldn't go to theaters. But this movie got people in theaters when it came out in 1975, and it was at the perfect time. It was summertime. People in there probably saw the movie, went out, and was like, I ain't going to the beach after this. So if they do, they probably like, I'm sitting on the sand. I ain't playing with it. So by 1975 standards, this movie is great. And even by today's standards, it's still a fantastic movie. That says a lot.
Most definitely. Now, I was just going to say, like, and then, you know, we get to the big, you know, they're on the hunt. Three of them are on the boat. And then we get to the big climax of, like, man versus shark. And, I mean, it was said that Quinn kind of, like, in a way, sacrificed himself for the crew. Like, he died, you know. We thought Matthew died, but he just went, you know, swimming around. And then, you know, Brody, the most infamous, like, smile, you son of a bitch, and then, you know, blows Jaws up until three different sequels. But, yeah, it was dope.
I think that they seeded that perfectly. Mm-hmm. All of that action, you know, they hinted at the cage. And Quint's disdain for the cage. You go in the cage. The cage goes in the water. You go in the cage. The shark's in the water. Then never will see you again. He's singing that Laura Dunn song. And then, then we, you know, that's a reoccurring song. And then we see, you know, Quinn, who is, this, you know, battle hardened guy. You know, the shark literally jumps on the boat for him. It is like, if you aren't so grounded in the movie at that point in time, and he's reaching for Brody. He's trying to save himself, and it's inevitable that he is going to be at this point. The ship is going down, and Jaws is like, I'm coming away with somebody, and it's him. So I think, you know, a lot of the things are definitely foreshadowed in the dialogue and some of the action. And then Hooper says to Brody, you know, you can't mess around with these tanks. You mess around and pull the wrong string, it'll blow up. and you know, that's
yep.
that all of those things kind of lead those little breadcrumbs as to how this is going to end. So I really love to see those things come full circle in horror movies. And specifically, it's really well done.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, he blew Jaws up into three different sequels. You know, Jaws 2, which I barely remember, Jaws 3D, which made no sense, and then Jaws Revenge, which technically is the third one, the last one. But yeah.
Were any of the sequels good? Because I don't remember them.
They were, especially Revenge. I liked Revenge a lot, but then you kind of realize that Jaws isn't just a regular shark. It is like a supernatural shit that just chases after the whole family. So.
Seriously, it's like a Michael Myers shark.
Yeah, it is. Because in the 3D one, right, those are his kids. Those are his sons that are running the park.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is definitely afraid of the water. Like his father, and they mention it. He's like, and then the mother later on is like, you know, I'm not going to let you die. And I think that's the revenge, right? I'm not going to let you do what your mm-hmm. father did and, you know, spend your life chasing this shark. So, yeah, you know what? Jaws has a vendetta.
That's crazy.
And he was after the whole family. It's crazy. If you guys have not watched the sequels, you have to watch it. Again, 4th of July, they play the whole marathon of Jaws.
It's good stuff.
I might have to sit down and check all of them out again because I haven't seen them in a long, long time. Well, that was fun. Before we get up out of here, Thaddeus, thank you for coming again, man.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm sorry, I'm a talker, so I'll just start rambling, so you got to reel me in. This has been great, though. I love talking horror movies, any kind of horror movie. So thank you guys for having me. And if you see fit, I would love to come back.
Of course. We love having guests. We love doing these. And yeah, we just love horror movies. That's why we do this, because horror movies are the best.
They really are.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, man. We appreciate it, man. All the insights you brought to us. I ain't seen this movie in a while, so it was extra good to sit back a little bit and listen to you and Jackie chop it up about it, because I haven't watched the movie in so long. It was like, oh, they bringing up stuff I forgot all about. There's some things I didn't even know, so I appreciate it very much, man. I really, really do. Before we get out of here, like, tell people where to find you if you want people to follow you, like your page, check out your movie, anything like that. Feel free to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Fanaticproductions.com. Fanatic with a K, FANATIK Productions is my website. And you can find me on everything at Fanatic Productions. So Instagram and Twitter and Facebook.
Yes.
Awesome, awesome, awesome.
Any last words, Kendall?
Don't go in the damn water.
Yes. And also, you're going to need a bigger boat. Just telling you guys, you're going to need a really big boat. But with that, again, summer, have fun, be safe, cool down. And with that, I will say, ooh, ghost goodbye.